I find it really thought-provoking and fascinating that this little instrument is so important and so significant and has done so much and has been played such a huge part in getting people to do things, and particularly foot soldiers, the infantry, who are the ones who have marched on or ran into battle over the centuries, and they're entirely commanded and directed by the bugle call sent to them, you know, from getting up in the morning to the way they behave on the battlefield. Everything they need to be told has been told to them by this instrument.
This documentary will be following the process of Amy Slavin's sound piece, Call Up the Men. Call Up the Men is formed around the use of the bugle instrument. Bugle is a brass instrument which is typically known for military signals. Over the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing from Amy, as well as other contributors to the piece who have a great deal of experience with the bugle. We will be following the process of making Call Up the Men, as well as discovering more about the bugle instrument.
I'm Amy Slavin, and I work with audio projects. I do events and project production, and I also make sound installations, so pieces that you go into a space and the work happens around you, and other works with sound. I mean, actually, the piece that we're going to talk about isn't exactly an installation, in that it's going to be something that you can carry about and stand on a table. Right, I've been producing installations and sound works since 2005, and I sort of came into it by accident and then realised that I wasn't massively impressed by the standards of the work being produced, and I kind of thought, well, I'm an audio anorak, I'm obsessed with sound and music and radio and all things audio, so actually, why not throw my hat into the ring and have a go? So since then, I think it's 11 pieces I've made, which are purely standalone pieces of art in themselves. I began with an 8-channel audio portrait of the postcode that I live in, and working right through till my most recent piece was the beginning of my military interest, or really the explosion of my interest in military matters, and not so much militarism, in fact not that at all. I don't care at all about weapons and things. What interests me is people, the way that military people are often characterised as not being human in the same way that other people are, and contend with that. So I want to make work that humanises soldiers and all military people. So I did that with one of my most major complex works so far, which is 16.4 channels of extended surround called Other Ranks, and that's been showing variously since 2012. And now, as a sort of follow-on from that and pursuing some of the same themes but in a very different way, I'm now making this piece, Call Up the Men. Was following on from Other Ranks, and still the same thought of wanting to get past the idea that soldiers and military people are, these people say they're trained killers and they just obey orders and all of that, and they have to do particular things and behave in particular ways and live in a particular way, but none of that stops them being human beings. And so with Call Up the Men, what I'm trying to do is take a different approach to making the same point that I was making previously with Other Ranks. And in the case of Call Up the Men, what I'm doing is using bugle calls, which were used for hundreds of years. They're now largely ceremonial, but I'm told not entirely so. They were used to communicate commands and instructions to soldiers in battle and in camp. And they're just little tunes, little riffs that are played on the instrument. But each one of them, because people have to learn them, they have to learn to play them, and they have to learn what they mean so they can respond to them properly. And so each one of them has words put to it. And what interests me is the way that the words change the meaning of the music from a civilian point of view. It changes the music from just an interesting little tune that is just very short and doesn't really lead anywhere, and actually turns it into something that's about human beings living lives and still having human preoccupations and interests and being pretty much like everybody else on the planet. For instance, there's the call to come and eat, which a lot of people are familiar with, and it was my way into the subject. There's this tune. which, and the words to it are, come to the cookhouse door, boys, come to the cookhouse door. And I thought, actually, that tells you so much, and just kind of soulless little tune there, but actually put the words to it, and it becomes clear that this is really meaningful for people, and this is the signal to come and eat. And come to the cookhouse door, boys, gives you a real picture. To me, straight away, I'm thinking, right, so this is a field kitchen. Come to the cookhouse door, so they're all expected to go and wait outside, and they'll be given out a bowl of whatever it is that they're being given. And it's just, I find that really informative, and like already I understand a little better.
Come to the cookhouse door, boys, come to the cookhouse door. Oh, come to the cookhouse door, boys, come to the cookhouse door.
I then spoke to Alan Tamblyn, who founded the National Bugles Association, to find out about his experience of using the bugle.
I joined back in 1975 and joined the Light Infantry, which was the sort of first regiment in the British Army to use the bugle. So I served for 7 years as a soldier and bugler, and I am now running Buglers Association many years later, and kind of back doing what we were doing back then, so sort of keeping the heritage alive. And we attend all sorts of events, including funerals. In fact, I was at a military funeral on Monday, so big part of what we do now. The bugle has been a major part of my military career, actually, and once you are a bugler, it's in your DNA, because we were, and in fact still are, the figureheads of the Light Division. It's something that we're all mentally proud of. So we were combat soldiers. We served alongside all the rest of the troops in the regiment, but also we were the regimental buglers who took part in all the ceremonial side of things as well. So, yeah, it's been a massive part of my life, and very proud of that. Because I left school at 16 and joined the army, and I had this idea in my head that I wanted to go off and be a soldier. And I arrived at the training depot in Shrewsbury. A load of us got off the train. We piled into a coach and were taken around to the barracks. We went into the company office. And as they were registering us in, the sergeant major just took me to one side, looked me up and down and said, you're a smart looking lad, I'll put you in as a bugler. And I sort of had visions of Boy Scouts with an old brass bugle making a row. That was my kind of understanding of buglers at that time. And I was horrified. I said, no, I've come to be a soldier. I want to be a soldier. And he said, son, he said, that's exactly what you're going to be. Our buglers are some of the finest soldiers we have. So I thought, oh, I'll do then. So off I went, and then undertook, you know, training for the next sort of 2 years to become a soldier stroke regimental bugler. Bugle is very much like a simplified sort of trumpet or cornet. In effect, it's just a bent piece of tubing. The difference is, though, with the other instruments, because they all have valves and the bugle doesn't, when you play the trumpet or cornet, you use the valves to make the notes. You just blow into it, key the notes, or press the keys, and that forms the notes. With a bugle, you actually have to form the notes with your lips. So it makes it a lot harder to play that instrument. Originally, for us particularly, they are quite a significant piece of military history. So, you know, we all look at things like, you know, the tank and the airplane and so on as playing a major role. But if you go back a long time ago, if you go back to the very early 1800s, we were the Light Infantry was formed at a time when British Army was sort of lining up in bright red tunics and being shot at. In order to sort of try and keep one step ahead, we formed what were actually Special Forces of the day. They were the light troops. They were dressed in green for the first time. And their role was to go ahead and skirmish, sort of hit the enemy hard. And they were very lightly equipped but heavily armed. And because they were working ahead of the main body of the army, they had to communicate. And in those days, communication was done on a drum. So the drummer would stand next to the commander, and he would tap out the commands, and the troops would hear the taps, understood what they meant, and then they would action it. Because our troops, our light troops, were fighting away and independently of the main forces, for us to communicate, we needed something that had that was lighter and more resilient, and that had the sound would carry much further. So the bugle was selected. So in its time, the bugle, believe it or not, was actually a major piece of communications equipment back then. And then the whole evolution then of bugles has gone on from there. They were used as for giving commands around the camp, and they were as well as being used in battle. In fact, they were even being used as late as the 1950s.
To hear about a more different experience of bugles, I spoke to Major Chris Lawton, who is a Rifles Regimental County Secretary in Durham in the northeast of England. But similar to Alan, Chris worked very closely with the bugle for a number of years.
I'm a long-term light infantry soldier and officer. I served 38 years in uniform and retired at the age of 55. But I was very lucky to return to Durham City, and for the last 10 years I've been the secretary, first of all for the light infantry and now for the rifles. I've answered to the bugle call for the past 48 years, since the age of 17 when I first joined the Durham Light Infantry, followed by another 39 years of light infantry. So I have taken orders, in a way, from the bugle all my army career. Infantry have always had bugles, although the heavy infantry of line have normally used the drum as their primary instrument. But the light infantry, the light division, i.e. LI and Green Jackets, we've always used the silver bugle, and it's our main instrument for all words of command.
A duty bugler in camp would start his day. Everybody took it in turns to be duty bugler, and he would start his day. He would get up at probably about 5:30, get himself ready, and he would go around the camp, march around the camp at 6:30 in the morning, sounding reveille to get everyone out of bed. Then he would go around and he would be playing cookhouse to get everyone to go down for breakfast. And then he would be sounding the fall in at 8 o'clock or 8:30 to get the troops basically to go and start their work day. During the day, he would do all sorts of things. So when the mail would come in and it was ready for collection by the different companies, he would go around the camp sounding the mail call. If the commanding officer wanted to see his company sergeant majors, then the bugler would go out and he would play the call to summon the sergeant majors to the CO's office. So whole dozens and dozens and dozens of calls could be played during the day, and the bugler had to remember them all. But in a battlefield setting, a bugler is a soldier. He becomes a soldier, and he is right at the front line, and he is right in the thick of it, and he is fully trained combat soldier, and he would have his bugle with him, and he would be doing a similar thing. Of course, in the heat of battle, when bullets are flying, the sound of the bugle is, you know, would come out over the top of all of that. So a very significant role in a wartime setting.
I went along to watch the making of Call Up the Men. It was there when I spoke to Liam Gibson and Mark Hudson about the process.
There's one more river to cross, me boys, one more river to cross. One more river to cross, me boys, one more river to cross.
It's the idea of music as communication. A lot of people have forgotten that the basis of music is to communicate either with other people or in the way that the bugle calls communicate messages to people. It's been going well. The buglers play the bugle calls and then I come in here and sing the words back, which is concentration, because I don't know the bugle calls that well. So I'm listening to them as they're playing them and working out how the words fit, and then zooming straight in before I forget it and getting them down, getting them sung.
I have worked in the field of audio for the last 35 years, I suppose. Most of my work is with the reproduction, either some of which has been domestic, most of which is for reinforcement purposes. A great deal of my work is done with loudspeakers, as probably the largest single thing I have worked on over that rather extended period of time. As regards to the project, as has been discussed, basically it's a bugle which will play itself ethereally or something along those lines. So the bugle has to be transformed from something which someone blows into something which can be attached to amplification in order to make its own noise. That being an interesting piece of work and somewhat different from the normal things that I do, but the same principles apply. I suspect it's not going to be easy. Two approaches. One is no modification to the instrument at all and using various of its own orifices in order to make it work, or by modification, so there will be mechanical work done to in order to achieve desired end result.
Okay, so this is a bugle that I have in the house at the moment as part of developing the project. Just to describe it, it's not very big, it's less than a foot long, probably about 10 inches, 30 centimetres long. And it's a curly piece of tubing, and it starts with a mouthpiece at one end, and then it spirals around twice or doubles back on itself twice to make two ovals that sit next to each other, and then it widens out into a lovely little bell from which the sound emits. It's a wonderfully quirky little instrument.
So this bugle is almost 100 years old. It was presented to the Durham Light Infantry by the family of a Lieutenant Colonel Frederick William Robson, DSO, who was commanding his men in the frontline trenches of World War I. And during the spring offensive, when the Germans did their big push, which was at the end of March 1918, Colonel Robson and over 500 of his men were killed during that campaign. And this bugle was presented in his memory. So every time we play it, we're playing it in his memory, really.
I'm extremely proud to have been a bugler. I'm extremely proud to have served in my regiment. And it's a great privilege for us to do what we carry on doing now today by attending funerals. Some of the funerals we attend are friends of ours. So it is a massive thing. It's a massive piece, and it's something that I am immensely proud of. As are, you know, the many hundreds of former buglers that are sort of part of our group. A lot of pride involved. There are huge cutbacks in the military, and funding is a major, major issue. And part of those cutbacks, seriously, things like, you know, the ceremonial side of it just cut away. They're the first things to go. It's quite a strange anomaly, really, because whilst within the regular army, the use of buglers and the training of new buglers has been cut back and cut back, the actual requirement for buglers is growing all the time because, of course, all the troops that served in Northern Ireland and, you know, or before that, World War II, Korea, Malaya, you know, so many other conflicts, you know, right through to Iraq and Afghanistan, all of those soldiers, all military, would like a last post sounded at their funerals. That will continue, and also on the ceremonial side, you know, lots of fanfare. So the future of bugling is, I think, very strong. And it's a lot of the veterans now, we're helping to train up army cadets and so on. So, you know, we're keeping the whole thing alive, and I think it'll be around for a very long time.
Well, there are lots of different things that I hope will be achieved by this piece. The first is, as I've been talking about, that people will listen to this and they'll go away thinking, well, I never realised that that was how it was, or I'd never thought of that before, or right, yeah, so those soldiers really are just like me and other people that I know. They're not a breed apart, they're people who do a particular job and have a particular way of life. On top of that, I hope that this will be a point of connection and a positive thing for military veterans who will relate to the subject matter. And then, of course, at the moment we're in the centenary of the First World War, and also this year, in 2015, it's 200 years since the Battle of Waterloo, which is another massively significant battle, that's really putting it mildly. And so that was one of the big catalysts for me becoming interested in this kind of work, just the, trying to get my own head around the scale of horror that war is, and then thinking, well, if I have trouble with that, then probably lots of other people are too, so hence there's a justification for making this kind of work. So I also hope with this work to make a slight tendril of connection, of understanding between the people who fought and died or survived and were injured or traumatised in ancient battles up to modern battles. On top of that, I hope be people who will come because they're interested in army music, and also the buglers themselves, because there's a lot of pride tied up with every aspect of the military, of course. This is something most people do appreciate, and buglers are very much no exception. They are very proud, and I hope to put some smiles onto the faces of some buglers by commemorating the importance and the significance of their instrument.